Don't worry, we ain't no squares. You can dance to your heart's content while listening to this breakdown of Footloose on this episode of That Song from That Movie. Foot.
Loose.
And mouth.
Thank you for joining the 98th episode of That Song from That Movie, the journey through the very best and worst of movie songs. I am your EE Unlimited Data host, Dietrich. And as always, joining us is EE Full Fibre Home Broadband, Alex.
Is that the one that can land planes and things?
That advert is the most stupid advert.
And a giant Rita Ora can destroy a city.
Oh, yeah.
How would you react if you were just having your Cocoa Pops? And Kevin Bacon shows up, well, via video link, alongside various people from London Heathrow to land a plane.
Can you imagine if they accidentally played those comms into the, like, the main body of the plane?
Yeah.
And you can hear some background going, I'm going to stick the kettle on. Anyway, and completing the lineup is EE Unbreakable Network, the only network built for gamers, Ben.
Something we don't have where I live.
You don't want EE broadband.
Although we have just this week got Virgin Media on my street, so we'll see how that goes.
Ooh,
I'm very nice. Angry at them though because of the traffic it's caused. So I might hold that against them for a few years.
Yeah, see if you can get a cheap deal by saying like you chewed up my street.
Yeah, basically. I did not like this four-way traffic light system you invented.
I would like to know in the past fortnight what have you been watching?
Footloose. Didn't quite wait that time, did it?
Been a while, guys. Have you watched films?
No.
You haven't watched a single film. You can't use WrestleMania. It was only 2 days of WrestleMania. There was not 2 weeks.
Yeah, but there was Raw, there was SmackDown, no, there was NXT.
There is every week.
No, but I've just been watching a lot of television. So I finished my Lost rewatch and I've been watching Shogun, which is like the next big show. Everybody should be watching it.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's really good.
Got subtitles?
Yep, so pass. I guess that reels it out for you, Ben.
Pass. Yeah, I don't watch any of that sort of Philistine crap.
Is it not just The Last Samurai, but worse?
The Last Samurai, now that is a film that I bet I should hate it, and it's probably in bad taste, but oh god, it's good.
Does it have a song?
It might do. It probably does.
Ariana Grande, I think, was it?
What, The Last Samurai? when we were watching all the Best Picture winners, we were kind of collecting them from charity shops and stuff, and Helen came home one day with The Last Samurai. And I was like, that did not win Best Picture. She's like, yeah, it did. He's like, no, you're thinking of The Last Emperor.
The Last Emperor, which is a much worse film.
Ironic.
Come on, Alex. Lift up the podcast. Well, you must have.
I have been watching films.
Yeah,
there's three films that I know I've watched since we last spoke. So, Anatomy of a Fall, which was excellent, but also had subtitles. Sorry, Ben.
Is it not the best dog performance in any film you've ever seen?
Yes, I would say it probably is the best. Although the dog from The Artist was pretty good as well. The weird thing when I watched this though was that we watched it on Amazon Prime, and the subtitles were kind of unsynced, but it seemed at first like it was an intentional like choice by the director so that you didn't see all of the information that came, because like what would happen is like you get
frustrating.
A subtitle that would be for like 10 seconds.
I don't remember that.
No, because it was, I looked it up afterwards. I was like, god, this is really? A weird subversive thing that they've done with this film. And it was just basically because I think it does it live, basically, so as you're watching it translates it. That's all I can think. So what would happen is, like, you'd have some subtitles which would be there for, like, 10 seconds, and then the next sentence would be up there for, like, less than a second. So you'd have to, like, kind of, like, try and scan it. But it's amazing how much information you can read within such a small amount of time.
Yeah.
It was weird. So, yeah, that was interesting. But it was a very good film.
Bring back courtroom dramas. There's not enough of them anymore.
Not enough
courtroom dramas. The 90s were filled with them. Scent of a Woman. Primal Fear. Hoo-wah!
I watched the film Nope. Which is a Jordan Peele film.
I wasn't mad keen on that one.
I wasn't either, but I read a lot of reviews and there was a lot of positive commentary around it. I thought it was okay. There's like very particular scene with a monkey, which I thought was really, really amazing.
Yeah.
The rest of the film, I wasn't over. Once I'd kind of read around it, I was like, I could really see what he was trying to do with it. But in the moment, I was like, it compels me, But it's not
it
something
insists upon itself
that I'm properly engaged with. It's like I know that it's trying to do something for me, and I can kind of almost grasp it, but not quite. And then last week I went to see Dune 2. Dune.
Oh my gosh! How awesome is it?
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, it was pretty good. I enjoyed every minute of the 2.5 hours runtime.
Yeah, and that's hard. That is hard for the length of it. It is absolutely. I didn't want it to end.
I know, it was so good. It was so good. And I think, like, the rare sequel that was probably better than the first. I know it's all one continuous story, but I think it actually did top the first one.
Can you give us your best impression of the whale?
Of the whale?
I can't do it. Someone at work, I was just stood there. It was like 8:15 in the morning, and someone in the echoey corridor was just doing that. Just by themselves. Lots of films. Go on, Alex. Holding the podcast up.
Yeah, well, I only saw Dune 2 at the cinema, so, you know, get me.
Yeah, look at you. Funding cinema.
I did take popcorn from the co-op, but or the coop.
Shush. Don't let them know.
You don't need to sneak it in.
I flaunt it, just throw it in the faces.
I did as well, I just walked in with the co-op pack.
Yeah, I used to walk in with, like, just Greg's. Greg's three-course meal on the back of the cinema.
Greg's three-course meal.
I was going to take in a meal deal, but I thought that's too weird to eat like a prepackaged sandwich whilst watching Dune.
I've seen some disgusting stuff. The worst I've ever seen, someone who was eating, I'm almost certain it was a quiche. And not like a piece of a quiche, like with a full sort of tray, the full piece.
Was it quiche
lorraine? The full quiche pie.
But what size are we talking?
Like what I like would consider size. Was the typical sort of no like a small size. But family sized quiche.
Right, okay.
Yeah, like a flan, like what I could describe as a flan.
Like one you'd cut into fours, basically.
One you'd cut into fours, yeah, and have a decent chunk, or two halves if you're feeling really guilty. So
that's the main part of the meal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was absolutely quiched up.
Might try it.
No, don't. Definitely don't.
What films are coming out soon that I could hashtag quiche.
At least it's a soft food.
Completely ruined Saving Private Ryan for me.
It's a soft food. I feel like that's
I'm
acceptable.
There trying to engage with the D-Day landings, and the smell of quiche is taking me out.
Hey, well, it's French, presumably. It's a French word.
I forgot about that key moment, storming the beaches at Normandy, where there was just many a quiche smell.
I think we've got to make it a thing. Hashtag quiched.
Yeah, it's like those people who throw forks at the room, and those people who went in suits to Despicable Me.
Yeah.
Hashtag get quiche.
What film should it be that's coming out though? What would pair nicely?
Is there a Ratatouille 2?
That seems too well matched. It needs to be something that doesn't make any sense. Like everyone eat quiche, he's going to see Kingdom and the Planet of the Apes.
one of the worst titled films ever. I'm not going to go into it, but I hate those film titles.
Good films, though.
To be fair, related to this, the film I saw was Monkey Man. The Dev Patel directed, Jordan Peele produced.
Jordan Peele produced, yeah.
Supposed to go straight to Netflix, but then they didn't like the political overtones, which is definitely over. It's basically John Wick in India.
Sounds good.
It even has a dog.
Would it have been improved with quiche?
By quiche.
You should go back and see it again, but this time take a quiche with you. I want to post a picture of you holding a quiche in the cinema.
Wait, are we saying whether the film itself would be improved upon starring a quiche, or whether my viewing of said film would be improved by said quiche?
The latter.
Yeah, definitely
the viewing. Okay, so we're not like Dev Patel.
But I think you have to pair the quiche though. Is it like a quiche Lorraine that would pair nicely with Monkey Man? Or are we talking like
I don't even like quiche. All my mind is doing is trying to think of puns, and quiche is such a stupid word that I can't think of anything that rhymes with quiche. It's a pastiche. No, come back to me.
A pastiche.
No.
Right, we really need to move on. So, happy birthday to us.
Is this a birthday episode?
I'm sure to Ben's relief, this is actually a birthday episode, and it's not a Toy Story movie because we've run out of them.
Thank God. Thank God. And by the time Toy Story 5 comes out, I will be dead.
You'll have had a quiche-related incident.
You'll be dead next year.
So, as a birthday treat, we are helping ourselves to a big heaping load of two songs from Footloose. So to find out what was happening in the world when the movie came out...
Time for some history.
Quiche-story.
Quiche-story. Nice, nice. I mean, it's not going to get topped. We're not going to get topped. So we're going back to April 1984. Now, sometimes we look at the news from the time. Sometimes I look at some random films from the time. Guess what? April 1984 might be the most boring month in existence. Nothing. However, I discovered in the darkest depths, in the corners of a Blockbuster video store, there is a film which I'm going to have to show you because it is a film that I have seen simply by doing the research for this film. Looking into April 1984, I have bought the steelbook for this film.
Oh, wow.
Called Conquest.
Conquest.
So, a young man armed with a magical bow and arrows embarks on a mystical journey through a mystical land to rid it of all evil and join forces with an outlaw to take down an evil witch bent on claiming the magical bow for evil.
It looks like He-Man.
Ooh, Les Masters.
No, this is completely original. This is a completely original film. Just wait for that magical bow to come off.
It does look good. Oh, the magical bow. Wait, is it the guy from Clash of the Titans?
I don't know who he's from. It might be.
There's a nude lady with a silver mask on.
Yeah, wait for the sound effects. That's just about to come, Alex, as he hits the guy.
Oh my god. Well, is she the Queen of Darkness, the lady with the snakes and the mask?
Oh, I like the rotoscoping. That's cool.
Yep. At some point, lasers come into it as well. Oh, this is a film that looks like Conan the Barbarian.
It does like Conan.
And then lasers.
I'll put a link to this in the episode's notes if anyone's listening. Still.
Fantastic.
Oh my god. The bow, where the bow lights up.
That looks cool. That looks really cool.
And fires lasers. Actually, it looks like a good film. So, I don't know. I can't work out much.
Could this be the greatest film that has ever released in 1984?
Conquest.
Spoiler, it was terrible.
I mean, the problem you've got here, Ben, is that on the YouTube video you send it says Conquest brackets 1983.
Oh.
Well, maybe it was released on video in 1984. Another film came out in 1984, a less important film, one that has had less of an impact on the zeitgeist of modern culture, a so-called film, Footloose. Mm-hmm. For those unaware, Footloose is a 1984 American musical drama directed by Herbert Ross, and it follows the story of rural newcomer Ren McCormack, which was Kevin Bacon, who discovers the small Midwestern town he now calls home has made dancing and rock music illegal. Perish the thought. As he struggles to fit in, Ren faces an uphill battle to change things, but with the help of his new friend Willard Hewitt and defiant teen Ariel Moore, he might just loosen up this conservative town. What a ridiculous premise. Thoughts?
Well, it's definitely a ridiculous premise.
That is true.
I think it's a good film, but I don't think it's a great film.
Tell me the difference between good and great. What's it missing?
I think what it's missing is that it's really
fun. Magical bow for now. It's missing a magical bow for one.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes. I mean, that is the main thing it's missing. It's really fun, and it's got a lot of good individual scenes that people will probably remember if they've seen the film, because there's a lot of memorable things that happen in this film. But, like, where it punches the air in joy, but it misses the gut. I think.
That's a nice way.
To quip it, yeah, you know, it misses the gut because it tries to inject a seriousness that it doesn't quite achieve for me, and I think that is because of just how stupid the premise is. I was comparing it in my head to films of a similar era that are kind of teen films, but do a better job of blending the fun, but with kind of bringing it into a reality that kind of grounds it. So things like Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, so like the John Hughes films, but also like Dirty Dancing, which we've also covered on this, which it have similar themes, but they just do a better job at getting that kind of serious side to it that gives the film a bit more depth and weight, where I feel like with this, like, it's a bit all over the place. Like, it's trying to do that, but it never quite makes sense because of just how stupid the plot is. But it's an enjoyable film.
But at times it feels like it's trying to make really serious points that it's just like, this is not the film for that.
Yeah.
Yes. Because, like, the premise is a fun premise, and I was like, it would be interesting to see. You know, it's like it's a concept film, really. So it's like, it would be fun to see what it would be like if a town banned music and dancing. And it's like, well, yeah, that's a good idea. But then trying to make that part of a real world just loses you, because it's like, well, that would just never, it's never to happen. You got a band dancing.
Well, Alex, we may see about that.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Well, maybe there is real life examples, but it just seems absurd, really.
you couldn't try and get Alex to be banned from dancing. The boy just loves it too much.
Just want to dance.
D, what do you think?
Oh, okay. So, I mean, this was a movie I was certain I'd seen before, but I think I've realised now that after watching it again that maybe I hadn't, because either I'd just seen parodies or my brain had just decided to wipe it from my memory because I thought it was rubbish.
Yeah.
I obviously apologise to anyone listening who's a big fan of it.
Sorry, Kevin.
I was just unable to shake the feeling that the whole movie had been dreamt up by a group of, like, out-of-touch parents in their, like, 50s and 60s who thought, my son will love this movie about how dancing is the only high that you really need. Despite its efforts to make it cool, for me, it can't shrug off that after-school special vibe it's giving out. And obviously, before anyone says, but the moral is the adults are too strict, let me pre-buttle that by explaining that you've been tricked. Preachy campaign groups thought they were being clever by sitting backwards on a chair and saying, okay, dudes, we hear you. Alcohol, drugs, and dancing are bad. But we're not bad people. How about we give you dancing as long as you promise to give the drugs and alcohol a swerve, Holmes? I saw straight through it. You can't fool me. I just found it very uncool. And I guess this is quite a British reference, but I was half expecting, like, the cast of Grange Hill to start singing Just Say No during, like, the end dance bit. Like Zamo and Kevin Bacon arm in arm
just
singing.
Just Say No.
That's a very British reference.
What I hoped was that there'd be the ultimate twist of all the adult fears came true, in that at this sort of barn, you know, off to the side party, it all just becomes some sort of debauchery hellscape in which they're all doing rituals to Satan. And
that would have been good.
Of a very 80s satanic panic-esque.
Well, exactly. That would have been cool. When you take away the songs, the brilliant songs from this film, I think what you're left with is basically like a TV drama that doesn't have any, like, warmth and feels like it's been made to appease the Reagans.
Yeah.
During that whole the war on drugs nonsense. I guess if you're 11 years old, you might think this is cool because it's about, like, being rebellious and being anti-parent. But if you're not in that specific demographic, I just don't see what's in this for you. And I'm not.
Yeah. And maybe, well, 11-year-olds in the 80s, I do not think an 11-year-old in the modern day would give a toss about Footloose.
100%, yeah.
Unless they added loot boxes to it somehow.
Yeah, maybe if the dancing was the Fortnite dances, then maybe we're back in.
Kevin Bacon's just flossing. Dry's doing the gritty, he's doing the gritty on Jonathan Lithgow at the end.
I'm happy to take the soundtrack, but I'm happy to scrap the movie.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it does seem to get mixed up. There's a lot of, I think it's a typical 80s thing. Like with the musical numbers, it's almost like they're making music videos. They've got that sort of montage cut. And then, as Alex saying, the tone just goes all over the place at different points.
Yep.
And the hilarity of just when Kevin Bacon goes to that factory sort of warehouse for that famous scene, and he's just so damn angry he's got to dance.
But he kind of doesn't even dance, does he? It's kind of like rhythmic.
No.
It's like gymnastics. He's like throwing himself around the room.
Yep.
The parodies are better than the actual scene.
Yeah.
He had I think he had 4 stunt doubles for that scene. He had a stunt double, a dance double, and 2 gymnastic doubles.
What does that leave?
Did he do anything in that scene?
What does that leave?
Yeah, I don't know. Close-ups of Kevin Bacon.
Just like face shots.
Yeah.
I think I just assumed that he'd done all of it.
Now, as we were saying, this film is absolutely absurd, and yet it is somewhat based on a true story. Now, in the small town of Elmore City, which makes no sense. Why call it a city? Anyway, the town banned dancing since its founding in 1898 in an attempt to decrease the amount of heavy drinking. Now, a reverend from the nearby town of Hennepin, a gentleman who went by the name of F.R. Johnson, once said, "No good has ever come from a dance. If you have a dance, somebody will crash it and they'll be looking for only 2 things." Now I ask you, Dean and Alex, what are those 2 things, do you think?
Sex.
Now you think, is he even going to say the word sex, Alex? It's probably that fearful.
Copulation?
Carnal relations.
No, think even more PG.
Rumpy Pumpy?
No, I'm not thinking of... Don't think of more PG ways of saying sex. I mean, just thinking of other things. Rumpy Pumpy.
Swearing.
Lewd behaviour.
Potential. So the answers are... He's clearly blaming... He's more blaming boys here because he said women and booze. And when boys and girls hold each other, they get sexually aroused. You can believe what you want, but one thing leads to another.
And you will get gonorrhea and you will die.
So yeah, there is some credence to there have been actual towns that have banned dancing.
Do we know if they unbanned them?
Well, yeah, I think it was banned for about 70 years.
Wow.
Now, this was very early in Kevin Bacon's career, so he had some small roles, an interesting role in Friday the 13th, if you've seen that.
I've seen the EE advert, yeah.
Well, I mean, everyone knows why he's had to do that, because the boy lost all his money in a weird scam. I forget what scam it was, but, you know.
EE?
No, now he's scamming others for money, D. That's the difference.
Oh, right. Sorry. My bad.
Now, two other actors were touted to play the lead before Kevin Bacon. Who would we expect of the time? One, I think, is a very, very famous, obvious one. The other one's slightly more niche.
Ooh. Swayze.
Swayze's a good guess. Swayze's a good guess, but no.
Gary Busey.
Gary. Now, that would have been... The chaotic cocaine energy would have been fantastic.
Ooh.
We're thinking big actors here. Big.
Emilio Estevez.
Bigger. Surprisingly bigger. Not just big in the 80s, big in general.
Tom Cruise.
Cruise? Tom Cruise?
Tom Cruise, yes. Tom Cruise was slated to play the lead. Now, there was someone else, though, who actually was picked first before Kevin Bacon. And that was Rob Lowe. Yeah. All I can think of is Rob Lowe from Parks and Rec.
That literally would have been a great pick.
Yeah. Now, the only reason Lowe didn't get the role was because he sustained an injury just before they started shooting, and they had quite a tight schedule, I think.
They had, like, four people ready to dance for them. Like, what difference would that have been?
Yeah, you think. Maybe it was, I don't know, maybe it was an injury to his face.
Oh, fair.
Was this before or after St. Elmo's Fire? Because it might have been just after. So maybe that's why he was kind of a name.
St. Elmo's Fire is 1985, so it's just before, actually. Although you don't know when they've been filming. So, as Dee's alluded to, the big draw for Footloose still is the music that has kind of transcended multiple generations, multiple decades. A big thing for Footloose, and a big thing that was quite common in the 80s, was that the music from the soundtrack was released prior to the film's premiere, just to start to build a buzz. Interestingly, in the week up to the film's premiere, the album already went straight to number one, which is quite interesting. So it stayed there for over 3 months, and famously was the album that deposed Michael Jackson's Thriller. So this was a big deal. Yeah. Clearly, the idea of bringing dance back to a small town was something that invigorated the US population. Now, there were 6 songs from this soundtrack which made it to the top 40 in the US, of which 3 made it to the top 10. Of which 2 actually made it to number one. So 2 songs from the same soundtrack, from the same film, made it to number one, which is pretty incredible. And they're the 2 songs we are going to focus on today. Now, there are some honourable mentions from the soundtrack that we should just give a little shout out to. The love theme of Footloose is quite famous. Almost Paradise by Mike Reno and Ann Wilson of Heart fame. And the brilliant Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler, which is a stone-cold classic, regardless of its relationship with this film or otherwise.
Do you associate with this film?
I don't know, not at all. I mean,
Shrek 2?
Yeah. I do associate more with Shrek 2.
If you ask me to put Holding Out for a Hero to a film, it's Shrek 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did remember it was from this film, in that scene with the tractor. It's the scene where they're playing tractor chicken,
yeah,
which I think is a classic scene from this film. Because, I mean, you've been very critical of this film, D. I think, like, I did, which I get, because it is ridiculous. But I think there is some charm to this film, and there's like certain scenes where I think it does work, and I think the tractor chicken scene is great, and it's a classic cinema scene for me. So
wow, you're putting it up in the classic cinema scenes there.
I am. I think it's
of all the games of movie chicken.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. I think it's a fun take on the idea, and I think it's delivered well, like in the scene, you know, his shoelace gets caught in the pedal, you got Holding Out for a Hero blaring out, but it's juxtaposed, which is like, you know, kind of like an up-tempo 80s rock classic hit, and then you've got like this really slow game of chicken and folding on, like, you know, in a country ravine. I think it's good.
I'll say in its defense that I didn't see the end of that scene because my eyes had rolled so far backwards.
Nice. D was in a full-on dissociative state by that point. Where have all the good men gone, though? That's what I do ask.
Well, and where are all the goats?
Yeah.
Where's that streetwise Hercules?
Being made by the baker on Drury Lane.
Yeah.
Right. Married to the Muffin Man.
Let's talk about the first song of the two we're going to cover, and that is Let's Hear It for the Boy by Denise Williams. Now, this song features in the film during a montage in which Kevin Bacon's character Ren teaches Willard how to dance. What do we think of this song?
We often say on this podcast that something's a bop or something's a banger. This is definitely a bop.
Yeah.
It's a certified bop. I know we also mentioned this a lot. It's a smooth, it's a magic radio, it's a hard, easy listening anthem.
Yeah.
And it's great.
This might be like a quintessential bop. Like, you know, that sort of like that really, it's almost like synthy bass sound. You know, that don't. It's got kind of like, it's,
yeah, it really gets your shoulders going, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you can absolutely sort of, it's an easy sort of bounce and click song.
I associate a lot with Top of the Pops 2 because I watched a lot of Top of the Pops 2 and this song is always on there because I think it was a really big hit, especially in this country anyway. And yeah, I think it was like, I mean, you're going to probably talk about it a bit, but I think it was like her first single. I think maybe she'd been like a backing singer or something. When stuff comes up on Top of the Pops 2, there's like the little quips underneath.
Yeah.
And then maybe she hadn't, that this was kind of, it was a really unexpected hit.
Yeah, in some ways. So she was very well known by this point, but she'd never really had much going for her. So she had, this was her second number one single, but the first, which came sort of, 7 years before that, in 1977, was the song Too Much, Too Little, Too Late, which is a forgettable song by modern standards, but it was a duet with Johnny Mathis, who was a big deal at the time. Actually quite late for Johnny Mathis, 77. So it was more the pull of him. But this song featured on her 8th studio album, so she was churning them out by this point. It was just that she started out as a backing singer. She sticked in the sort of the Motown sort of zone and not really kind of did anything out of that, and then broke out to a new audience through this film. And in a way, this has become by far, even though she's had two number ones, this is by far her big song. If you went on YouTube and listened to Too Much, Too Little, Too Late, you probably wouldn't recognise it. So with regards to Denise Williams, I'm interested what you think about this one. Monica Haynes of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette at the time said that Williams has the vocal range that would make Mariah Carey quiver. Now, is that hyperbole? That's a bit much in my eyes.
Well, it's hard to know, isn't it? Because she doesn't get to stretch it too much in the song.
Exactly.
I don't think many people of the 70s really did. Like, I don't think it... I think people were quite sort of held back in a lot of their singing, really. In the sense of range.
Yeah, because like you listen to Mariah, like half of Mariah Carey's songs are intentionally.
Yeah, it's like Christina Aguilera, isn't it? It's just screaming up and down.
Yeah, so that she can do that whole vocal gymnastics. Whereas this is just like straight down the line. She performs it very well, you know, and it's a great song. It's a bop, as we've said. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to really comment on that without hearing
As much as I think Mariah Carey is an absolute douche, it's hard to say that someone's got a great vocal range, I think.
Except for Mika, of course.
Yeah, well, that's the true comparison that's necessary.
People are always saying that.
Yeah. Over here in the UK, the song only made it to number 2, however, because it was pipped by Wham's Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Fair. Yeah.
Understandably.
Yeah.
Fair. Now, the song was nominated for Best Original Song at the 1984 Oscars, losing out to I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder from the very forgettable film Woman in Red. But what is a better song? Let's Hear It for the Boy or I Just Called to Say I Love You?
I'm going Let's Hear It for the Boy.
You think? Can you sing more than three lines of either?
Okay.
Let's hear it for the boy. Get the boy.
Yeah, and can you have to sing it like that. Alex, are you doing the thing with your hand as you do that?
You know.
Maybe he's no Romeo.
He's my lover, one-man show. Oh,
Okay, so Alex has got a few. Now, Alex, give us the next rendition for I Just Called to Say I Love You. With this one, instead of the hand, you need to do the head swerves.
I just called to say I love you, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. That's not dark or anything. Du,
du, du, yeah, that's the bit. It's like, du, no summer day.
Yeah.
Sorry, audience.
yeah, it's probably not the best thing to listen to that, is it?
Yes. So Dean Pitchford, who penned the soundtrack for Footloose and Let's Hear It for the Boy.
Really sounds like a made-up name.
What, Dean Pitchford?
Dean Pitchford. Pitch me, Pitchford.
What, some sort of transatlantic sort of journalist?
Yeah, hey, Pitchford.
Dean Pitchford, the New York Gazette.
Yeah, yeah, of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Now, what was I fucking saying? Dean Pitchford. So Dean Pitchford penned most of the songs from Footloose. He already had an Oscar to his name for the song Fame from the movie Fame. But guess what? Do you know what other soundtracks Dean Pitchford has penned? Because he's had some doozies. So Shrek 2.
Full sound.
Shrek 2, he loves Holding Out for a Hero. Clearly brought it back.
Oh, right, okay.
There is a connection. There is an even more important film than Shrek 2 that Dean Pitchford was involved in. And that was the Lizzie McGuire movie.
Okay. Yeah, well, also famously had Holding Out for a Hero.
You could tell. Now, I forget what Lizzie McGuire movie soundtrack. I forgot what songs were on there.
Oh, yeah. Pretending to Google.
Yeah. So, Many by Hilary Duff. Surprise, surprise. And then, nothing else that you would ever remember. Sorry, Dean. That's not one that's going down in your legacy.
Are we going to be covering it?
The Lizzie McGuire movie.
The Lizzie McGuire movie. I never want
a reason to go back to that film. We'll go to the Cheetah Girls next. Or was it Camp Rock? What was it, Camp Rock?
Camp Rock, yeah. Yeah, it was Demi Lovato. But although I don't think I can really look at any of these things in the same way after watching that Nickelodeon documentary.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you guys seen it? It is dark.
I have not, no, but I've heard. I've seen all the Drake.
Yeah, stuff, same.
And coming back out, yes. Yeah. So, yes, it sounds... well, it's nice to know that the things I watched as a child were rooted in abuse. It wasn't just the BBC. Now, Let's Hear It for the Boy reached number one for 5 weeks after our next song, which is the self-titled Kenny Loggins classic, Footloose. This is one of the quintessential movie songs, if you say... Tell me a famous song from a movie. This one's probably going to be up there.
Yeah.
It was the first single released for the film, and it features over the final dance of the film, not the warehouse scene, which people often confuse it for, which is actually the very forgettable song, Never by the Moving Pictures. What do we think of Footloose by Kenny Loggins?
So I think it is also in the opening scene, is it not? I
think it is, yeah. I mean, but like, I guess it's the opening credits. The film is brilliant. Yeah. I think there's a few.
What did you think to the opening credits of this, Dean?
Literally, when you said that, I did remember that the opening credits, I was like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah. Then
the rest of the movie happens.
Yes, well, the opening of the film from the credits to the first scene really highlights the issue with this film, because you go from that really kind of cool, interesting intro with all the feet dancing to some Footloose.
It reminded me of Do the Right Thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was cool. It's a cool intro. Like you say, it's pretty much downhill from there.
Yeah.
But I mean, the song is fantastic. I think we need a new gong for Caravan Classic, because this is a Caravan staple. It's a quintessential Caravan Club classic. And
do you actually want a jingle?
Yes, please make one.
Okay, I'll play it now.
It's a Caravan Classic!
It's pretty good,
that
right?
That was good, thank you. There was a real renaissance, I think, possibly the 80s, early mid-90s, of line dancing in this country. And this song was one of the songs that really pushed that forward. So if you like line dancing, then celebrate this song. If you don't, maybe don't.
If you like line dancing, all of our audience, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was kind of like this in Mustang's Alley, I think. So this song just brings back visions of middle-aged women line dancing on the east coast of Yorkshire. But it is a jam, undeniably.
Footloose, the song, spent 3 weeks at number one in the US. So less than Let's Hear It for the Boy. But it has found its way onto the AFI, the American Film Institute's 100 Greatest Movie Songs list, but it's only at the back in 96th.
I imagine that it's as low as that on the list because the film is not that good. Because I think if you were to ask, like you said, if you were to ask people to name a song from a film, this is one of the ones that people would say. Yeah. Because, partly because it's the same name, the song has the same name as the film, which helps.
It definitely helps, doesn't it? But it is a fantastic song. And like, we're on quite a hot streak of decent songs this year that we've covered on this podcast. So I'm worried to see what comes next, because it's probably going to ruin this streak we're on.
Yeah, I mean, we could just go through the AFI list, start off at Wizard of Oz, because we've never done that.
We do need to do that at some point. But I do think that going back to what you were saying before, the decision not to have this song over the main dance scene in this film is criminal. Like, when you're thinking of, like, what's the song from Footloose, you think of the scene, you don't think of the bit at the end. So it's just a stupid decision. Mistake. Unforgivable, whatever. Stupid film.
Stupid film. Now, alongside, let's hear it for the boys. Footloose was nominated for Best Original Song, obviously also losing out to Stevie Wonder. I wonder how often it is that a film has got multiple nominations and also lost
to Stevie Wonder.
To Stevie Wonder every time. When you look up Kenny Loggins, you go onto his Wikipedia or on various other articles, they call him the king of the movie soundtrack, which I think is a bit much. He has feature hits across the likes of Footloose, Caddyshack, Caddyshack 2, and Top Gun.
And Top Gun Maverick.
That's kind of it. Don't know if there really is another title challenger. I know we often wax lyrical about Diane Warren, though she is in the studio, not behind the mic. Although Diane could be a way forward, you never know. Duet with Johnny Mathers, if he's still alive.
I'm trying to think if anyone else could stake a claim. The only people that are coming up to my head are like the Sherman Brothers.
Yeah,
Shirley Bassey.
If he plays his cards right, Ryan Gosling, you could do it.
Yeah,
you've got enough time, sir. You've got enough time. Now, do we know much about Kenny Loggins outside of what we've covered in his film repertoire?
Does he have a ponytail?
Well, no, he's kind of that sort of long...
It's kind of a mullet.
Sort of, yeah,
big Jimmy Buffett.
Mullet-ish, with a very heavy beard. He started out as a duet singer, mainly in the 70s, alongside a man known as Jim Messina, which is such a sort of a country and western name. But he started to focus on the movie game after landing the Caddyshack gig with the song I'm All Right, which is also the name of his memoir. There's an interesting story that kind of comes up to how he ended up working on Footloose. After the Caddyshack gig, which was a film produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, he proposed songs for both Footloose and the movie Flashdance. Originally, he only succeeded with Flashdance. Flashdance itself having many classic movie bangers, which we will have to cover at some stage. As told from Loggins' memoirs, he said he had a great idea for a song for Flashdance, which he called No Dancing Allowed. However, he had to go on tour and couldn't delay that, and Jerry Bruckheimer wasn't willing to wait. So Loggins went on tour rather than do Flashdance. Now, one of the first stops on that tour was Brigham Young University. Shout out to my Mormons.
Big up the Mormon Massive.
The Mormon Massive, big up. Loggins recalled of that concert that the stage end had a sharp edge into complete darkness, which was like 10 feet below. He said while he was performing, he expected there to be more stage than there was, and he fell. He broke 3 ribs, and there's this kind of passage where he says it was very Shakespearean, where he was lying on the floor, feeling like he might be dying, while the crowd is shouting, Kenny, Kenny, as he's like fading out to black. In the end, the entire tour had to be cancelled. Fast forward several months, and Loggins is recovering alongside a pretty gnarly pain medication addiction. Now, he said that they made him feel well enough, so well, in fact, that he plucked up the courage to contact Bruckheimer with the idea that, well, if I can't go on tour, at least I can record. Unfortunately, the drugs may have built up that confidence in him, but it also meant that what he put together was terrible. He said it was nowhere near the final package. Once he was out of his drug-induced comas, he realised he just couldn't bring it together. Flashdance passed him by before he could finish, and he always recalls that as the one that got away. Not down on his luck for too long. Dean Pitchford. Yes, that Dean.
Yeah, Dean Pitchford.
Ready to blow this one wide open. So as he was penning the music for the film Footloose, he approached Loggins as he loved his, quote, uniquely American relentless upbeat nature.
Yikes.
And he saw him, Loggins, as the musical equivalent of the lead role. Just get Loggins the player. He had that many stunt doubles, did Kevin Bacon. Maybe he was about 40, so it might have been a bit of a different film. The two of them started working on the soundtrack with great pace. I think at one point, Dean Pitchford was so unwell that he had to be hospitalised and that they were working so hard. At one point, they weren't going to get it finished. Loggins tried to go on tour again, broke his ribs a second time. Makes me think that Dean Pitchford might have had a say in that anyway, just my rumours. And with the second breaking of the ribs, fully committed to finishing the song No Dancing Allowed, which eventually morphed into the song Footloose. Crammed together by Loggins and Pitchford in just in time before he finally went on the tour that he wanted to, which apparently was quite successful across Asia. So it seems like this song, if all had been different, if he hadn't have fallen off that stage in the Mormon capital of the world, that song might have gone to Flashdance and never been in Footloose. Who knows who would have been involved then?
Flashdance.
No, 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 no. Flash dance. Flash dance.
Kick off the Sunday pants.
Just kick off Sunday pants, it works, yeah. Could have had Kenny Loggins doing some sort of weird... is it a stripper? I forget what she does in Flashdance. What's the job? Is she just like a burlesque performer?
Doesn't she work in like a steel mill?
She works in a steel mill as well, yes.
Yeah.
Because it took them so long, I think they made the song just before the film went out. In the scene where Footloose plays at the dance... the actors are not dancing to Footloose. Now, I think this is quite common in a lot of films. Well, we remembered in Dirty Dancing, it was quite key that they wanted the music to be played while they danced.
Yeah, and you could tell in Dirty Dancing.
You can tell, yeah, in every other film. Like, there's at no point in when he's dancing in the warehouse does it look like he's moving to Never by the Moving Pictures.
Or music at all.
At no point, no. So Kenny Loggins was asked to pick a song that he felt had the same tempo and kind of upbeat nature as his track Footloose. So he went with Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry. Apparently he was quite happy with finding that pick, and then he said when he came back and listened and watched them play, he was like, oh my god, it's too quick. They're in no time. They're not in the time whatsoever. So if you watch Footloose back, they are moving way too speedily for his title track in the end. But yeah, that's kind of how Footloose became. Do you want one last fun fact?
Yeah, go on.
Always.
Alex, I know this one might be a favourite for you. One of the backup singers for Kenny Loggins songs in Footloose, Richard Marx. As a 19-year-old Richard Marx. Straight out of school, Richard Marx.
Wow.
Is there a Richard Marx song in a movie? Because I really want to cover... what's it called?
Whatever it takes or how my heart
It's a very Bryan Adams song.
It is very Bryan Adams, yeah.
Can make any grown man cry.
Surely that song must be from the film.
It must be. Wasn't
if not, make the film. Put it
in. We're the next to never.
How can we stay forever?
Yeah, there we go. God, this is going. As soon as we finish this, this is going straight on the old Spotify.
Yeah, cheers. Watch it.
Top 5. We're going to do, like we've done before, as we come to an end of our episode today, a little game of higher or lower. So before, I'm trying to remember who won last time, actually. I've got it written down somewhere.
I think it was D.
Yeah, it was. So D. So this is only the second time. So D's won up on this one. Alex, pick up the game, really. Come on. You're getting too far behind.
Alex needs to finish the story.
Finish the story, absolutely. Yeah, that incredible record of D of one podcast episode.
Acknowledge D.
Okay. Now, weirdly... Footloose's global box office takings are nowhere to be found online. Kevin, now we know you've got money troubles. Where's it gone? There was only the US domestic box office run, so I couldn't do it accurately. So, as an ode to the story that I have just told, we are going to start with Flashdance, which grossed $201 million worldwide. Now, I am going to ask Alex and Dee, after I say the next film, to think whether the film after grossed more or less than Flashdance. Okay? And then we're going to go from there on a rolling one. If there's a tie at the end, when I'm going to do a closest to the actual number wins.
Okay.
Okay?
Let's go.
Flashdance grossed $201 million worldwide. And then we're going to go to another Kevin Bacon film. A man who is clearly only famous for EE because he does not have a great back catalogue. We're going to go to the film Hollow Man. Now, Hollow Man is a very good film, a good take on the Invisible Man story. But did it gross more or less than Flashdance's $201 million? So we're going to go D as the perennial champion at the moment. Do you think it's higher or lower?
Horror films, or horror-adjacent films at least, usually have a lower box office compared to most films. So I'm going to go low.
Alex?
Lower.
I was also going to just say lower.
Okay,
just because I've never heard of this.
Yeah, heard of it.
If you'd have said Tremors, Hollow Man, it's a Channel 5 classic.
No, if you'd have said Tremors, I'd have been like...
I did think it was weird you jumped over Tremors. Come on.
Yeah. Because Tremors was nowhere near the box office takings of Flashdance. So you're both going lower?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You're both right. 1 point each. Hollow Man grossed $190 million. Not a far off, okay? We're going to go next to John Lithgow, who played Reverend Shaw in Footloose. He also starred in the action classic Sylvester Stallone film Cliffhanger. Yes, that's right. Remember Cliffhanger?
I couldn't forget it.
That amazing death at the start. But did it gross more or less than Hollow Man's $190 million?
Oh, Cliffhanger had to be more. Sure.
Sure.
It had its own video game and everything. It's terrible, but it had it.
Okay, you're going higher. D, what do you think? Higher or lower? Cliffhanger?
Yeah, I've got to agree. It has to be higher.
We're going the highest. You're both right. But not by lows. $255 million US dollars worldwide. All right, we're on 2-2. Next up, did you know that Sarah Jessica Parker is in this film?
Oh, yeah, she is.
In Footloose, yes.
In Footloose, yeah. Rusty Rodriguez, she plays. Her greatest role ever. She is also famous for playing What's-Her-Face in Sex and the City. Sorry, my
Carrie
wife.
Carrie Bradshaw.
Yes, I was saying Samantha in my head and that's the other one in it. Even though it was a very successful TV show, it did then come into movie form. Sex and the City, the movie. Did it gross more or less than the action classic Cliffhanger?
It's got to be higher. It's got to be.
I was thinking higher as well. It's got to be more.
Yep.
You would be right. $418 million. It absolutely smashed it.
Bloody hell.
$418 million. What has the world come to? Not as bad as their little weird Abu Dhabi advert in the second film.
Yes.
So, $418 million, Sex and the City movie. We then move on to Diane Weist, who played Vymore in Footloose. She was also in Edward Scissorhands, the great Edward Scissorhands. Did that gross more or less than Sex and the City?
So, Sex and the City was $400 million.
Yeah, $400 million. Over. $418 million altogether.
I'd say that Edward Scissorhands grossed less than that.
Okay.
As big as a film as is.
Oh, is this the last one?
Well, we've got this. We've got a tiebreaker if this obviously
goes. Okay, then I also go lower because I agree.
You would be absolutely right. It was pathetic. Edward Scissorhands only grossed $80 million US dollars. Okay, then guys.
Not a snip.
Ready? For all. Now this one, guys, I'm going to ask you to, on WhatsApp, to message me your view, okay? Did we all recognise who played Willard Hewitt in Flashdance?
No.
The name doesn't mean anything to me.
It was Chris Penn, the legendary Chris Penn, RIP. Famous for many a gangster film. One of the main characters of Reservoir Dogs.
Yes.
The Quentin Tarantino classic. Now, I want to ask you guys, how much do you think Reservoir Dogs grossed worldwide?
Which was what year? 94?
So we're talking its initial 1994, in its initial release. So not re-releases, because it's had a fair few of them. On its initial release, how much do you think it grossed?
Okay, sending my guess. I do remember a story about when it was originally shown.
Okay.
Which is affecting the score, I'm guessing.
I'm waiting for those pop-ups. Okay, interesting. So we've got our guesses in. D, yours came in first. You've gone for $150 million.
Okay. Quite low for worldwide, I think.
Less than Hollow Man. Yeah.
Because I remember a story where Tarantino stormed out of Cannes because it was not broadcasted right, so I wondered whether or not he had a bit of a tantrum about how it was being published.
The man does love a tantrum. Alex, you've gone for 88 million?
Yeah, my logic here being that it was probably a very high rating, e.g. an 18, so probably wouldn't have as high box office.
Okay, clever.
That was my thought process.
Interesting logics here. I'll give you a bitter on this one. So this was a completely, if you remember, this was a completely independent film. It came out of Sundance, so the Independent Film Festival, and didn't get production rights until quite a bit afterwards. So in its initial release, it only had a limited release. And so it only grossed 2.9 million at the box office.
Jesus Christ.
So by that logic, Alex, you were off by 85 million, but you still win because D went too high. Price is Right logic complete. Prevails.
I completed my story.
Completing the story. We're tied at 1-1.
Do you know, it's funny that I was originally putting like 100 and something million, and then Dee said his thing. I was like, oh, I should go lower.
Well done, well done.
So I probably would have still won anyway.
But Alex wins 1-0. Your present is in the post, Alex.
Is there a picture of Quentin Tarantino's feet?
Does he like his own feet?
No, but I like his feet.
You like his feet. Now, Alex, it is a lovely family-sized quiche.
Ooh, of course.
It's the exact one that I just beat. I beat and stole from the guy in front of me in seat F12.
I really have to try this now.
Cinema quiche. We've gone full circle, or as I like to say, full quiche.
Full quiche. Now that's a niche reference.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to do, well, I think it's probably more difficult end segment than usual. We're going to do best song. So, Alex, what's better, Footloose, or Let's Hear It for the Boy?
Holding Out for a Hero.
Why do you have to do this to me?
Well, why does he always win in there?
It's fair, but like...
There's always one.
Just play on with this, Alex.
I personally have more of a connection to Footloose, the song, because, of, you know, as I've said, it featured strongly in my childhood as a line dancing classic, so I think I'll go for Footloose.
Ben?
Yeah, I just, that guitar part with Footloose when it kicks in, I just think it is a fantastic song. Hear It for the Boy is a good bop, but this is the movie song, and it is on that, should be on that incredible list that is a reason why we do this podcast.
100%, and I'm in 100% agreement with you guys.
There you go. We're all logins, we're all dropping logs.
Jesus, we're all pushing one out, forget it.
You're getting rid of the log part. That's the bit that makes it obvious.
Well, we're all big cloggings.
We're all clogging.
We're all cloggings. Oh, Hashtag clogging loggings.
Okay, so that brings an end to another episode of That Song from That Movie. Let us know what your favourite song is from the entire film on one of our many social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, another one probably. Alex, what is our social media handle?
TSFTM Pod.
Thank you. So you can also help the podcast by sharing this on a random subreddit. But Ben, what random subreddit should everybody share it on this week?
Ooh, I think just bacon. Just bacon.
Right. In a quiche Lorraine.
Yes, it can feature.
So you can help the podcast by leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen to this, buying our merch, signing up to our Patreon. If this is the first time you've ever listened to this podcast and you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe. All the links and all the notes are in the show's description. So all that's left now is to do some goodbyes. So it's goodbye from myself. Goodbye. And goodbye from Alex.
Here's a few taglines for this film. One kid, one town, one chance. All he wanted to do was dance. And this is my favourite. He's a big city kid in a small town. They said he'd never win. He knew he had to. Win what? Win what?
It's terrible.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
There's another which is just the music is on his side. The films they're describing are better than this film.
Yeah. And goodbye from Ben.
Hashtag unleash the quiche.
So goodbye, everybody. Bye.
Hashtag clogging loggings.
Yeah.